Eighth Grade Conference, Lecture 1, The Eighth Grader, Part 1. Those of you who have taken part in the online conferences I've offered for grades 6 and 7 have heard me speak about the tremendous change that overtakes young people in those years of puberty and adolescence. So some of this will be repetition for you, but it's interesting. It's good to hear it again and again and again, because it's easy to forget some of these things when you're caught up in the midst of actually dealing with this age and the tremendous challenges that you're facing. So I ask for your forbearance and see if you remember all of this. I should also mention, because we're talking now about eighth graders and not sixth and seventh graders, there are some significant differences as well. Human development doesn't ever stand still, and certainly not at this age where, as we all know, and you know by now, week by week, month by month, tremendous changes are occurring in the young people. Now, it's of tremendous importance in eighth grade, and I will probably be talking about this more than once to you, whether you are the teacher who has been with them since grade 1, or if you joined at the halfway point, let's say grade 4, or if you have come in the last trimester, as it were, in grades 6, 7, and 8. I'm sure that I'm talking to some people here who have just joined this class in grade 8 or are brand new. These things matter a great deal. And I have spoken on other occasions about the fact that Rudolf Steiner had a 7-year cycle in mind, not 8 years. The eighth year was added by the state because that fit into their bureaucratic model, and also significantly because they said these are factory children and they're just going to go into an apprenticeship after their elementary school years. They won't even be going on to secondary school. So you need to give them 8 years of education, not just 7. This is all they're going to get. And Steiner squeezed a whole lot into those eighth grades. But I don't think anyone who has ever taught grade 8, and I've done it 4 times myself, ever has the feeling that they have the same degree of support from Rudolf Steiner, from his indications, from his vision in eighth grade that they did in the preceding 7 years. There's something where you're left a bit more on your own, which is great in the sense that you're given freedom, which you certainly don't have in grades 1, 2, and 3, for example. On the other hand, though, you're asked to rise to the occasion and to work out of yourself at the very time when students are at their most difficult and agitated and uncertain. So it's a mixed blessing in many ways. And it's also important for us to remember that Rudolf Steiner's wish initially, at first, was that teachers would stay with their class from grades 1 through 7. That was, as I say, the original vision. But he also added very quickly, wherever possible, where possible. And we have to say that in our time, it's less and less possible. And I would imagine that 30%, perhaps 40% of those of you listening to these lectures have been with your class since grade one. In fact, if you're on the West Coast, the likelihood is more 25 or 30% of you may have possibly been with the class since grade one. That makes a huge difference. You are carrying, when you've been with them from grade one, you are carrying within you not just a memory, but one might say you are carrying tangibly, in an actual way, the etheric bodies of those children. That you've kind of taken them in for safekeeping, knowing that they're going to be challenged and, in many ways, overcome by the powerful astral forces that are going to come in later years. So the children feel, when they look at you, when they are talking to you, when they kind of come up, if they're a boy, punch you in the arm or whatever, they feel that you are the guardian of their early childhood. And that means a great deal. On the one hand, there's something in them that wants to rebel against that. On the other hand, however, they're really glad that you're there, because they can't relate to their parents in the same way anymore, nor should they. They're the others who are carrying those forces of very early childhood. But you as a teacher are carrying them much more consciously, much more objectively, and they feel more comfortable with that. So that is a tremendous advantage that the class teacher who has been there from grade one has. There's no way of retroactively gathering that up. Though on the other hand, it also elicits a greater feeling of rebelliousness, and because the astral body is very sanguine in nature, it also gives the children a feeling again and again that they're sick and tired of you. They've had enough. As my classes used to tell me in the upper grades, Mr. Schwartz, you could be replaced by a machine. And you know what? Here I am. I'm a machine. You're listening to me on a machine, and my voice has been mechanically, electronically taken up so that it can work in a machine-like way. They were right. But anyway, you don't have to do that. So that's important. If you came in the middle years, like grade four, grade five, you still have something of the etheric life of the child. You also were there at a time when the astral body was making its first incursions. So, good. You have a sense of what those children were like when they first met the astral body. And that gives you certain capacities. You know, you met them at a very important time there. If you've come in the uppermost grades, they may really, really love you because you came new, fresh. Maybe you rescued the class academically or socially from an incompetent teacher who came earlier, or they feel you're more grown up. You know how to meet them more than the teacher they had earlier on, who realized that she only wanted to go as far as grade four or five and couldn't work with children after that age. So there are advantages there as well. But you have to watch out, because you're going to tend to go most readily with the flow of the astral body and leave the etheric behind. And the problem with teachers who come in the later grades, present company accepted, of course, is that they're the ones who will say, yeah, you can bring in your electric guitar on Fridays. That's fine. You know, they can hang out with that. Yeah, I saw that movie too. Yeah, that was kind of awesome. And, you know, a lot of slang, a lot of stuff that makes the kids feel, yeah, he's really cool. She's really our friend. There's something to be said for that, and I will talk later on about the way the teacher appears and relates and so on to the children, but one also has to be careful that that is not the only way in which you are presenting yourself to the students at this age, because they still need a sense that you understand them on an etheric level as well. So that's the particular challenge if you're the new kid on the block, in a way. We'll also be talking about, along with the eighth grader, the eighth grader's parents and the very different relationship we have there. So I've been throwing around the words etheric and astral. I mentioned the physical body once as well. And let's look into that in some more detail, because as always with anything that we do in Waldorf, that really matters tremendously, the fourfold nature of the human being. And I want to encourage you to look at some of the dynamic diagrams that I've created, which are available if you scroll down below the lectures in this section. You'll see links to those on Vimeo. That will help schematicize what I'm about to say. So let's look at the fourfold human being, and then I'll also continue this in the next lecture. So there's the physical body, which is what we have when we're born, and which is going to be there with us for the rest of our life. Has a great deal to do with being alive. And as Rudolf Steiner brought to our attention again and again over many, many lectures, the physical body that we have is what differentiates us, and we are spiritual beings. It differentiates us from every other spiritual being in the entire universe. That all of the hierarchical beings, ranging from the angels all the way up to the thrones and cherubim, and that the seraphim, that they are beings who have never been in the kind of physical body that we carry. And what's unique about it, what's different about it, is that it is filled with mineral substance. So we are, in a certain way, from a spiritual point of view, if you have a rock anywhere in the room or right outside, if you could look at a rock, okay? Look at a rock that maybe is not much bigger than your fist, and think what it would be like if your entire soul and spirit were inhabiting that rock. What would that be like? Prison. It would be an imprisonment. It would be, you know, you couldn't move. You couldn't be terribly creative. You couldn't even eat. You would just sort of be at the mercy of the elements around you. From the point of view of the higher worlds, that's how they see us. They see us as being imprisoned in this rigid, fixed physical body. And they feel tremendous compassion for us on the one hand. On the other hand, they just feel we're kind of at this point pretty hopeless. That, you know, because we can't really do anything about being stuck in the physical mineral world, we're just going to turn the whole world into something that's physical and mineral. That is to say, we're going to pollute it. We're going to put minerals in the water. We're going to put minerals in the air. We're going to make everything, in a way, just unable to support life. So I bring it in this dramatic way because, in a certain respect, every time we incorporate a new member, a new part of our being, which happened at age 7 with the etheric body, which happens at age 14, now 7th, 8th grade, the astral body fully incorporating that body, it will happen again in our late teens and early 20s when the ego approaches us. Every time that happens, we awaken that much more to how difficult it is to live in a physical body. And there is, at each age, each seven-year period, a stronger impulse to escape that body, to get out of it in one way or another. It's what psychiatry used to call the death wish. And it certainly can lead to, on the most harmless level, restlessness and nervousness. This is the age where kids start to rap on their desks. This is the age where they start to, if they still have the ballpoint pens that, click on and off, they click it. They're having to touch something, hold something, move something. You could feel it right down to their fingertips. Restlessness in the body. But that's the least of it. Restlessness is one thing. Recklessness is another. And this is an age of recklessness. And eighth graders are notorious for doing the craziest things, things that you would never have imagined them doing, and getting themselves in major trouble. And sometimes they wait till like the day before graduation to do something that's decidedly worthy of expulsion, if not a jail term. And what do you do about that? What do you do about that? This has to do with the sense that this physical body that we have is the biggest challenge that we face. And not just once or twice in our life, every single moment we are alive. Now, we get used to it and we kind of, learn how to deal with our limits. But at a time like eighth grade, we don't want to live in those limits. We want to get out of it. So this is why the physical body is of such incredible importance at this age. It is really being faced and met. Now we'll go on in the next lecture to hear about the other three bodies that the eighth grader has to work with.